Loyal listeners, if you would like to get the HLS podcast ad-free, as well as get some bonus content like the National Recap podcast, as well as some other random musings from myself, make sure you head over to patreon.com/ndtex. It is just $1 a month or more, if you so choose, to access all of this bonus content. And I would like to thank new patrons, Brian S. and Brent L. Thank you all so much for your support. Well, hello and welcome to another victory edition of the HLS podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Ritter. You can call me NDTex. And as always, you can subscribe to this little pod over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you happen to get your podcast feeds at. Make sure to join us in Discord. That is our live chat channel over at HerLoyalSons.com/Discord. Head over to twitch.tv/HerLoyalSons for that sim action. Get your Navy Ang started early at Thursday night at 9 p.m. Central. And of course, you can always find us at HerLoyalSons.com. And with that said, time to bring in Shane. Shane, happy Halloween, my friend. How you doing?
I am great. Happy Halloween to you as well. Happy victory edition once again. Honestly, we'll talk about it in detail, but this was possibly like my favorite game in since Brian Kelly 2.0
really
had to emerge. I think so. And we'll talk about the number of reasons why, but I just had such a fucking blast with this game. And in retrospect, it was also one of the funniest things that I've ever seen in my life. But it was fun, man. I feel good.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad of a game. Obviously, there's a lot of angst over the defense, which I'm sure we'll cover. And I'm sure people, you know, it's like, hey, they didn't have Kyle before. What the hell, giving up so many yards? And I think when you get to prep, knowing Kyle's out is the defense. You got to see the result. But hey, it was a victory. Notre Dame is 7-1, which meant people started flocking and mentioning Bill Conley, that we are about to top his win projections. I don't even know if it was salty or mad or what it was, but I'm like, damn, why is he getting so mad about this? And then he jumped in a conversation with somebody else completely, and he jumped in on there. Like, do you really? It's like, what was his exact words? It's like, I know I'm on the verge of, no, I'm not mad really, but do you really think I'm mad? I'm like, Bill, I don't know. Somebody drug up a tweet from August, and you replied to, it's like, well, all these Notre Dame fans. So it's like a coordinated attempt to which MQ, one of the co-founders of HLS, now departed, said, it's like, Bill, have you ever seen a sink clap in Notre Dame Stadium? There's nothing coordinated about this fan base, which cracked me up. But happy we might beat SP Plus preseason projection day. All we have to do is take out Navy for that to happen, but overall, let's start with really the real good news, and that is the offensive side of the ball. My word.
Yep.
We knew that this defense was going to suck on North Carolina's side. And once again, we have another game where Jack Cohn plays well enough. He, still had a couple frustrating times where he took some sacks where you'd rather him not take them, but wasn't making dumb plays, wasn't making dumb throws. And meanwhile, Kyron Williams feasted, and by feasted, he had that 91-yard touchdown run was the most bonkers play I think I have ever seen a Notre Dame back pull off. That was some video game shit.
Yeah, easily. I mean, it's hard to not want to like just jump right into the discussion about how amazing Kyron Williams is, but like that play had so much amazing shit going on, like. First and foremost, it's all credit the entire play was Kyren Williams being an incredible athlete. That's essentially what happened, because the offensive line didn't do jack shit. Like, when he described the way the play unfolded in the post-game press conference, he was like, I knew I was going to score the moment I stiff-armed number 12, which he didn't even, if you watch the play, like, yes, he stiff-armed the shit out of number 12. But you need to also understand that the way number 12 momentum was carrying him at the angle that he was at, all he needed was kind of a forehead slap, right? To be completely thrown into the shit wind off balance, because he was leaning like at well over like an 80 degree angle with his upper body, and he was aiming for Kyren's thighs. Kyren just kind of like said no, just a little no, and he was down. You didn't see him have to push very hard, so his momentum was allowed to carry through it unabated. Like, he didn't have to stop. So then, when he gets to the next level, I wish we could do, I know this isn't a visual medium, but I wish we could do like a walk through the play, because I've seen it so many fucking times now that I have all the elements memorized. Like, the immediately following the stiff arm, he gets up to the second level, and Kevin Austin just side shucks somebody into the fucking stands, which he's running along, mind you, the North Carolina bench. So they're all freaking the fuck out. Like, you can see them kind of backing up. Two North Carolina players at different intervals of the run step in front and scream something at Kyren as he's running past, which obviously doesn't matter. During which, the entire time, Michael fucking Mayer.
Oh, he was mauling that guy.
Dude. Okay, so Kyren gets the stiff arm. Michael Mayer sees it and then instantly turns upfield, just assuming there's a lot of work to be done right now. So he goes and hunts the first guy he sees. And right before he's about to bear maul the guy, he turns back really fast. You can see his head turn back to the left just to make sure Kyren is still on his way. And he fucking obliterates his block. Meanwhile, Kyren's getting to the next level. This whole time, he's being trailed by Avery Davis, which was my favorite fucking part.
Yeah, I saw you highlight this on Twitter.
Bro, I saw it on Twitter. I was like, I cannot believe this speed is just sitting on the fucking offense right now. And he's a senior on top of that. He bursts into like just this Mach fucking 5 next level when he sees that Kyren is about to take this to the house, because he knows he's got some helping to do down the field to help deter the close-in tackles at the very end. And man, he outruns Kyren for like a good 15 or 20 yards. He outpaces Kyren entirely and then just cuts off the defender that's chasing him down and allows him to walk into the end zone no problem. That fucking play ruled. Like, it is the best running back play. And I know Josh Adams had the 98-yarder. I know that exists. But that is still the best running back play in the Byron Kelly era, period.
No, easily. And it was mostly because, like you said, you go all the way back to Kyren creating it, because the play was dead to rights. It was going to be a run to the right side, and the right side of the line just got their asses kicked on that one play. They got their asses handed to them. Oh, yes. And then Kyren's like, well, we're going the other direction now. And like you said, I mean, it's something that we get so used to how well he can stiff arm to where he doesn't need to make that much of an effort. Like you said, it just looks absurdly violent.
It really launched 12 into the shit. It was amazing.
Yeah, and I think my favorite part of the Avery Davis, hitting the nitro button on his legs there was the fact that he knew he just had to freak a defender out and get in his way. Like, he didn't even have to throw the block. He's just like, no, I'm just going to zoom right just past.
Right in front of him.
It was great, and it basically made people quit on the play. And I'm watching this. My in-laws were awesome. They set two TVs up outside of the party. One had a big Braves fan, so they had the World Series. They're like, no, you don't need to watch on your phone. Go watch Notre Dame game. You're cool. I'm like, oh, awesome. So I got to see that there, and everybody was just like, oh. Notre Dame fans, just absolutely floored with that play that was going on around it. It was just, like I said, it was some video game type shit. It was stuff that you're used to seeing, like Reggie Bush or Barry Sanders pull out of their ass. Just, it wasn't even making something out of nothing. It was, oh, there's nothing here, I'm going to still score. I really want to take a freeze frame of the moment before he cuts to do that whole little meme. It's like, Kyren Williams scores on this play.
Yeah, he does. Like, when he makes contact with, I think,
three of his own offensive linemen on his way to the right before he literally just bends in half, looks past his own hips, and decides to pivot to the left because he said out of the corner of his eye he saw all green and decided for no reason to just turn around.
The vision he has is something else, and he makes the decision insane. So quick is the best part about it.
Yeah.
And the other thing I love, and we mentioned it before, of how great Kyren is at talking shit, and he's just got this incredible attitude all the way up to where a hot mic picked him up, where he was pissed that he didn't get 200 yards.
Yep.
And was asked about it, too. He's like, 190. Yeah, I knew. Yeah.
I knew. Yeah. Did it bother you? Yes. Yes, it did. And I mean, he ran for, I guess, technically 202, but like with lost yardage, it was technically recorded as 199. And right. That's fucking depressing. But still, I mean, again, with what this offensive line started the season looking like, to rush for, what was it, 298 yards?
293 yards is what I'm looking at here.
So just, that's it's such an absurd turnaround with the installation of Joel and Kristofic on the left side of the line. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and look, I know a lot of that has to do with North Carolina's defense. It's pretty atrocious. But on the other end, there's been a clear difference as well. You've seen the greater pushes happening to where if the other, you know, we had the rotation we were going with at the beginning of the season, I don't think we see this kind of an explosion that what we saw. Because, again, think about what we said with that play alone. Going to the right side, that means the left side still has to do their job and not collapse as well, which is the kind of stuff we've been seeing. There's been no cutback lanes to take advantage of. And these last couple of games, oh boy, there have been cutback runs, lanes, there have been big runs. Logan Diggs with Chris Tyree, he was basically relegated to kickoff duty only, which I think is a smart play. So they gave Logan Diggs his carries, and man, he is another bullet, man. When he hits a hole, he just explodes. It is absolutely incredible. He got his first touchdown of his career. It will not be the last, I am sure. It just, like you said, you can't believe the speed. It was always a joke that Notre Dame just didn't have the speed to compete. And they got it in spades now. It is just absolutely incredible what this team can do in the skill positions.
Yeah. And I mean, just so long as the quarterback play remains sound, everybody else around can really shine. And in this case, we got there's the freshmen got to get involved. I mean, Logan Diggs and Lorenzo Styles also had an opportunity to shine. He didn't quite complete the first one, but he definitely followed it up and closed on the second one. A slight demonstration, because then immediately after that he had the long ass run play on a semi sweep. It was just like what they're now capable of doing now that they can trust the offensive line. I feel like this is what the offense was supposed to be from the beginning. They were supposed to have found the correct combination, and so then they can do this, move the pieces around, mix and match, check out all the freshmen, you guys are all fucked, you don't know what's coming, thing that they're doing with the mix-up, and oh shit, now it's Tyler Buchner, oh crap, and Lorenzo Styles, oh, and Logan Diggs is on the field at the same time as Kyren Williams. Good luck, everybody. Mako Mayer's over there. It's like, you know, like that's the kind of thing you want to do to opposing defenses is overwhelm them, but they couldn't until now that they have this offensive line in place.
Right. And not only that, like you're mentioning, the Buchner part of the equation, Notre Dame is making it real clear he could be a passing threat too. Like if anybody was just sitting run there, and oh man, did he absolutely make that first touchdown pass he had. Everybody came flying down. That's why I wanted Buchner in the red zone. It's like, I know people are going to fly. They're going to be, you know, defensive ends are going to make the wrong read. And that's exactly what happened there, is whoever was supposed to be covering, who was it on that pass? Was it Davis? I think it was Davis.
Yeah, Avery Davis.
Yeah, it was Davis.
Avery Davis.
Yeah, and
with the two blockers downfield.
He
screened
it
out to the right.
He just had to threaten that he was going there. He's like, oh, wide open, easy TD pass.
Walked in.
Just beautiful. You got an RPO game like mixed in with a quicker up tempo spread passing attack, and then you got a power running game as well. I mean, this team has gotten back. This was a run-heavy game, but this felt like a Notre Dame offense again, finally.
It's a smart use of what you have with Buckner right now. It's like, you know you have a guy that can do both, but you don't need him to do any of the throwing in depth. You need him to just make a good first and second read. Don't overwhelm him. Just tell him to decide, hey, man, are you going to keep the ball or not? That's it. That's basically...
Are you going to throw the wide-open touchdown, or are you going to make it harder on yourself? I mean, that was literally the read he had to make.
It feels like that's the system, though. It's just going to be plays in column A and plays in column B. The plays in column A are going to be run or keep options, okay? You're going to decide one or the two. Plays in column B are going to be handoff or pass, and that's going to be it. And then there's going to be this extra arrangement of plays where it's good. Yeah, sorry, I just knocked my mic over.
You're getting so excited the mic went down.
No, I just swung my hands gesturing and absolutely smacked it.
I'm leaving that in.
The extra column of plays I was going to say are just instant, just direct runs, no bullshit. Don't even think about the handoff, just run it like a bullet.
The power QB runs is something else
with him,
that they have.
He runs strong as shit, too.
Yeah, and not only that, it's the ability of the other receivers to block. You got Mayer running there, and it's also saying, it's like, hey, Kyron, you know, go kill somebody. I mean, this is a guy that is listed at my height, so he might be a little bit shorter. And he's like, okay, let me go hit the hell out of somebody. That guy, everybody on this team loves to block, and when you basically could say, all right, we're basically wildcatting this shit. Like, let's just go hit somebody. And
and
Buckner is thriving in that part of the offense. The rotation doesn't feel forced anymore. It feels natural. It feels like it fits. We are seeing it get mixed up in the red zone a lot more, which I think is an incredibly smart thing to do. I haven't gotten a chance to look at the red zone numbers in particular on this one, but it didn't feel anemic again. Now, that being said, we still had some opportunities where we're leaving points on the table and stuff like that. But, hey, one of it at least let us get to go make a short field goal for Dorr. So that always made me happy that we
He actually converted it at least this time.
Right. And, I mean, look, it was fun on the offensive side of the ball. And the frustrations and the angst that we had earlier, obviously they're not gone because there's still the worry about Cone and what he can and can't do. But I will say this. We have been saying for a while that if you're going to run a read option with Cone, he's got to be told that at some point he needs to pull the damn ball down. And by God, did he do it. And he actually scored, which I do not know if I have laughed so hard.
This is what I'm talking about, man. This is what I'm talking about. Like, this is why I think this was such an entertainment spectacle for me. Because it's like all the weirdest but also most satisfying shit kept happening. Aside from the defense like being like, oh my God, where are you? What are you doing? What's happening? Like the way the offense performed. To also have included a 21-yard rushing touchdown
from 21.
Jack fucking Cone, untouched. And then for his post-game comments to be, I take nothing for granted. I looked around and thought, wow, I can't believe I'm still going. Like, that is the exactly what we all thought too, man. Like, I get that feeling.
I'm sitting there yelling amongst a bunch of strangers. I'm like, go, you slow son of a bitch, keep going.
I was just sitting there. All I was doing was pointing at the TV going, he ran and you didn't stop him.
Yeah, that should make you want to retire all over again, Mac, to have that shit happen to you. Absolutely hilarious to see that happen. And to see, you know, you could definitely tell there was that shock look on his face. You could even see it live. He's just like, really?
What the fuck? Are you shitting me?
Okay.
Are you shitting me right now? Everybody, did I do that? Yeah.
Amazing. It was great. So that wasn't the only time he pulled the ball down either. Like, he actually made an effort to run a little bit, which I wonder if now that is showing a level of comfort that he has with this offense, he has with his skills, and hey, I can figure out, like, after a while, it's not even a read at that point. It's, I'm just gonna, this play, I'm gonna hold it to keep him honest. I mean, that's That's really what it feels like. You just do it every now and then if you've got the comfort level.
It could be that. I think it also meant is probably that he probably has noticed in practice that every time there's a read option, and somebody's supposed to get to the second level, they do it. And it's probably that Kristofic and Joel are more dominant than prior options allowed him to choose from. So, like, for example, there may have been a keep where you could run that shit left or right, just pick whichever gap opens up first. And there was never an option to run left, for example. So, everyone just like, hey, everyone just crashed left and he's going to run to the right and we'll always fucking stuff this play. It doesn't matter because they got nothing on the left-hand side. Look at all the film. But now, maybe the second level is opening up on both sides and he's finding himself with like, holy shit, Jared Patterson is 8 yards in front of me and I can absolutely just gash this motherfucker. You know what I mean? Like, maybe. It could be that, or like you said, it could be a combination of that and what you're saying, where it's like now he feels like he's got kind of like his sea legs underneath him with how the rhythm of this offense is supposed to flow, and now he feels a lot more comfortable doing that kind of thing.
And this was another rough game for the Brian Kelly refuses to play freshman crowd, as Lorenzo Styles is your leading yardage in receiving yards. And we mentioned he had a couple different plays where, I mean, that guy's got a gear and a half that he is another one that just seems to explode after he gets the ball. And he's got one of those strides where he just doesn't look like he's trying, and yet nobody can catch up with him. It is great. Avery Davis, again, just stalwart, staying solid. Kevin Austin making great catches, great plays, gets himself a touchdown too. Michael Mayer gets receptions beyond the first quarter. And there were a couple like really key ones where Mayer was, play calls that were directly for him. And Mayer is just having space open for him, and Cone's looking people off. It was a thing of beauty to watch. It really felt like, and again, I know it has to do with who we're playing, but man, did it feel like they were clicking on all cylinders in this one.
Yeah, it did. I mean, again, aside from the, a couple of instances in which you have some drops, Avery Davis had a drop, like a couple small, still tiny hiccups that like you wonder, oh, and Braden Lindsay going out looking like he may have been injured again and may involve a hamstring groin leg situation or something. Who's to say? The injury, aside from the injury bug looking really, really grim right now, because again, they're down to maybe what, 5 scholarship wide receivers, including somebody, right. Jaden, Thomas, that hadn't even seen playing time, had to like, be in the rotation now.
Go run routes, please.
Yeah. It's like, fuck, please just be a body out there. But at the same time, like that, aside from the injury situation, yes, this time they finally hummed and I think a lot of that had to do with the chemistry, the overall vibe, the insistence on sending Mac, with another L and moving UNC to 0-13 all time in Notre Dame Stadium. Maybe that was it, but you never felt like it was in doubt. But yeah, I have to say, North Carolina's defense definitely helped a lot.
Yeah.
Because they're not good.
It definitely did. They were not good. And they were causing very little havoc. Only one sack where Cone kind of ran into one there. And beyond that, just 4 tackles for loss. Only one QB hurry beyond that. I mean, Cone was kept clean. It's real easy to make decisions when nobody's breathing down your neck. And according to the ESPN stats here, only one pass deflection the entire game.
Yeah.
Which Notre Dame only had one too. I guess we should talk about the defense a little bit. But you got anything else in the offense, Shane, before we start to make our little transition?
No. Here? The summary of my feelings about the offense is this week I feel like a proud dad. I can walk around and talk about how good Notre Dame's offense was because they featured the single best play of the weekend. That's how I feel.
That's awesome. All right. Well, we're going to talk with the defense. Before we do that, we're going to take a little bit of a break and address a little podcast business as always. And of course, that big podcast business starts with Home Field Apparel, which you can find over at homefieldapparel.com. They are back to releasing non-big name schools, non-Power 5 schools. They are back on their bullshit again, Shane. I'm still holding out hope for the Salukis, but man, they're starting to rock designs. I think my favorite one right now is there's two of them. There's a Furman University one that has FU on it.
FU all the time or
all the time? FU all the time.
FU all the time. That shirt is legendary.
And I forget the school, but it's the mascot's the Paladins, and it very much looks like a generic RPG Final Fantasy type shirt you could wear around, and like any, like you could show up at a D&D and nobody would like think you're wearing sporting gear. Like it's
that's amazing.
I mean, they are always hitting no matter what. And the best part about it, all the shirts supremely comfortable, and the hoodie weather, the hoodie season, it is in here. I don't have to look for too many excuses to throw the thing on, and every time I do, and it puts me in a better mood. So if you want your mood elevated while wearing something that says F you, like Homefield Apparel's got you. And of course, there's great Notre Dame gear. Look, Christmas shopping's coming up. You got a college football fan in your life. So go ahead and check out all the various universities these folks have under their belt. Homefieldapparel.com. If you have yet to take advantage of anything, any purchase there, or you just know how to make a new email address, go and use promo code LOYALSONS for 15% off your first order. Again, that is promo code LOYALSONS at homefieldapparel.com.
Do it.
Loyal listeners, if you ever wanted to get a deeper insight into the Notre Dame football program from somebody that lived it as both a player as well as in the inside of the athletic department, we suggest picking up a copy of If These Walls Could Talk, Stories from Notre Dame Fighting Irish Sideline, Locker Room, and Press Box by none other than Reggie Brooks himself. Reggie will dive into everything from his time playing under Lou Holtz all the way up to the experiences of watching Brian Kelly lead today's Fighting Irish. And we are happy to extend a 25% offer off the book just by going to herloyalsons.com/book. Make sure you use the code WALLSND25, that's WALLSND25, when you make your order. Again, head over to herloyalsons.com/book, use the code WALLSND25, and enjoy a great addition to your Notre Dame football library.
Okay, so now that we've had fun, Shane, we had our moment. Let's kind of dig into the icky part. Okay. 341 passing yards given up. 213 rushing yards given up. Yep, that is 550 plus, y'all. Yep. Ooh, did this defense miss Kyle? Did they miss Kyle? Goodness.
Yeah, there were some real big misses in this game. It's not the yardage thing. Like, I feel like Irish Sports Daily, was it maybe? Or no, it was the Shamrock Podcast. They pointed out that this is becoming increasingly less important, but they were outgained, right? They outgained the Irish in yardage. But at the end of the day, the problem was that they were just humongous fuck-ups in single plays on multiple occasions on the defensive side of the ball. One was just an absolutely just blown coverage isn't even the word. There was no one within 30 yards of where this guy caught the ball and walked into the fucking end zone.
Antoine Green's touchdown reception.
Yeah, the closest human being was the fucking mascot 15 yards to his left. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was just egregious how he walked in. And then there was a rushing touchdown by Sam Howell that ended up being the result of Jordan Botello blowing up Drew White.
Yeah, that was weird.
It was just a stupid angle. Botello chased when he should have just fucking gone back to cut off when he started, you know, because he scrambled outside the pocket. He did like one of those almost bootleg pattern running escape things. And instead of cutting him off at the pass, he chased him down and cut off Drew White's actually good angle and ended up causing a touchdown. But it boiled down to what you said. Kyle Hamilton is sorely missed and we don't even know how long he's going to be out. So it could be like this for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, if you the Navy game would be another one I would love to rest them up on, because look, you assume Marcus Freeman has enough sense. He's played Navy plenty of times before at Cincinnati. Sure. You would assume he has enough sense not to, you know, do three down lineman type bullshit and really just, you know, have the have the five man front or something. You got enough. If there is one place where this defense has a lot of beef, it is on the line. And I would love to see us plug up a lot of our deficiencies, not just in the secondary, but also in the linebacking core as well. Go ahead and just load up the line. But that aside, it was very obvious the game plan was make sure Sam Howell does not eat you alive. Right. And as far as like the touchdown ledger, yeah, mission accomplished. He only got got 300 plus yards, but there was that only that one blown coverage that you mentioned, Shane. That was like the long strike. For the most part, save for the Ty Chandler run, which the 53-yarder was like, what the hell or what? That was just a frustrating play, but it was clear they were missing their leader for sure. Yeah. And you know, I don't know how much angsty I want to get about a defense that was missing their best player, and you had a team that had a long time to prepare for it. Sam Howell definitely knew how to pick the teams apart. You also had other moments where it looked like they were going to get off the field. One that sticks out of my mind was J.D. Bertrand was like all excited, looked like he was going to get a sack, except when he came down, he clubbed the Howell in the head, which is one of those frustrating, yeah, I get it, but come on, really? 15-yard penalties? And that one ended up, you know, leading to a touchdown as well. I mean, that kept that drive alive. So, I mean, they're
but they also did the same on their end. They did the same thing. You know, they had a costly holding penalty or a face mask penalty that wiped that way, a fourth down stop. So,
But I think kind of to cap it off that, you know, this defense stayed in it, kept going. And just refused to quit. I think the moment there was obviously at the end of the game to help seal it was DJ Brown, Kyle Hamilton's replacement, getting the game sealing pick. You know, it's like, hey, you know, really more or less was a game sealing pick. Sim never lied to y'all. It never told a lie. It just happened a lot later than we all anticipated, but it happened. There was still a lot of havoc within this defense. They had 7 tackles for loss, 3 sacks. So, I mean, they were in it. They were causing issues. But really, Howell played one of his better games of the season. So you kind of just have to tip your hat to him. If it weren't for that one interception, I mean, he's got a, you know, just absolutely stout ledger against this Irish defense. But all that said, it was just kind of the couple defensive lapses here or there. And, you know, it's one of those things to where I'm not sure if Marcus Freeman knows how to play a bend don't break defense, because it seems like anytime he tries to lean into that, he breaks. Something happens.
A lot of breaking. I mean, I guess I was mentally prepared for this to be a high scoring affair. I was just not expecting 33 points and, you know, gashing blown coverages and 3 down linemen and fucking, there was one play, Isaiah Foskey lined up at linebacker and I was fucking fuming.
Oh yeah.
I was like, why are we forcing this issue? We shouldn't be.
It's one of those, it's like, let's give them a different look. Let's try to confuse them. But the problem is when they hand the ball off, you're confusing nobody.
Yeah, you're confusing Foskey as to why was I put in this position.
I don't know where to defend a run from here.
God damn it.
I'm back here to defend a pass. What happened?
Watch it happen from over there. It's just, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's...
I wouldn't call it panic.
No, I think we're... I get the feel, Shane, that we're in a longer adjustment period than anybody expected with Marcus Freeman, because the common thought was, well, he's an absolute rental of a coach. He's going to be here for a year or two, and then he's going to go off and finally get his head coaching shot. So now what we're seeing is more so a result of he's not the god we all thought he was, basically. And he's going to be human, and he's got to basically take his time and actually figure out how to work this talent around him and then start building the defense that we all expect him to have that will force him to get hired somewhere else.
For me, it's that, like, yes, he still has to adapt his own personnel. Yes, he still has to figure out, you know, how to structure people, you know, like what groupings he's putting, you know, how, when he's making defensive alignment changes, like kind of like working a hockey rotation, you know, like when is he putting what lines in, when is he putting which ones out? But in this case, like, it's also that he's a young coordinator, man. Like, he's not some long-toothed ass, you know, hotshot that suddenly came on. He's been doing this for, what, like 3-4 years? Like, it's not, you know, let's also understand that this man is still growing into what being a defensive coordinator at this level entails. How often you're going to be called on your bullshit. You know, like, he needs to, like, also understand that at Notre Dame, people come at you with, like, vindication. They don't come back to you like, oh, well, it's Cincinnati, we better make sure we get this here W, buddy, and hopefully we can make ourselves a bowl game at the end of the year. No, it's like, let's crush Notre Dame, let's bring all the tricks, let's fuck them. Like, that's how they come, that's how they approach us. And they're going to approach Marcus Freeman with a little bit extra oomph because he's also a hot name. He's also this recruiting god. So you can understand the salt that people are going to bring to the table when they know they're going to sit across from him for the meal for the night. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to look at him and hope that they can get him sweating before the night is over. Like, that's the whole, you know, situation that he walked into when he took this job. Like, I'm not saying that it's because of anything in particular. It's just a confluence of all the things that he represents in this role right now that he's going to be challenged more often. And on top of that, yes, he's still figuring out how personnel alignments, you know, relate to one another and how different guys on this team work together and, you know, what combinations are actually jiving and what formations make sense depending on what game plans he's facing or whatever. The schemes versus scheme bullshit. Like, all of that is still in play. Like, let's all just relax. We don't need to be hot or cold. You know, we don't need to just decide, okay, now I hate him, or okay, now I'm disappointed in him. Like, he just started his job, man. You know,
right?
You didn't know Bob Diaco's fucking name till his third year. You know what I'm saying?
So exactly. It's like, just relax. And then now, how's Bob doing? Like, does anybody really want to drag him back in here? I mean, like I said, it was the expectations that everybody I think fell into way, way, way too fast. As far as, you know, and hey, I'm guilty of it too. I was expecting a lot more, and now it's like, okay, well, he's good, but he ain't this superhuman. We'll just tap the brakes there. We got really lucky with Clark Lee sliding into the position and having a scheme that for whatever reason worked really, really well. And now this is kind of a radical departure. So you're kind of, you know, shifting, fitting pieces, trying to figure out how things work. And like you said, Shane, it's a different level of football. It's a higher level, and he needs to figure out how to adjust to that as well. So he gets now a taste of, hey, this is just like what it was with the American. I had to deal with Navy's bullshit all the time. So let's go ahead and run this back. I should know how to handle it. And hopefully he does, because I will be really concerned if I see some of this bullshit crop back up, especially if we're without Kyle, which obviously, again, like I said, I don't know if Kyle needs to play a defense or defense against a team that not just loves blocking low with the legs because they enjoy doing it, but because they have to, because they're fucking outsized like crazy in any other defense, you know, where they face any other defense in the nation. So
I just want you to think about the visual of Kurt Heinisch, Myron Tagovailoa-Amosa, Isaiah Foskey, and Justin Amelola against anything the Navy can put together on an offensive line. Just
right, exactly.
That's it. That's all you need. The rest will fall into place. Everything else will be a disaster for Navy beyond that. Just put those four or any rotation thereof on the field at all times and you'll be fine.
That's it. I would love to see us walk out there with a 5-2.
Go for it. Be so happy. Do it. Smother. Put in fucking Jason at the end too. This is kill him.
Adam Eola twin lineup. Let's roll with it. But yeah, like, look, nobody's gonna write any long notes home that this was a fantastic defensive effort. But what I will say is that at the beginning of the game and at the end of the game, they bookend with quarters of 0 and 7 points given up. So at the end of the day, I mean, this team could do it. It was really, when you break it back down, it was those couple of just, you know, bang your head against the wall plays. I think this time I would say there were about three or four of them where you're like, what the fuck are we doing? Again, yeah, clean it up, be able to figure out how to do things without Superman backing you up at the last level. And I think we could get some stuff cleaned up. Navy is a good opponent to get back to the fundamentals and to stop fucking around and figure stuff out.
So yeah, we'll see. Generally, you know, the Navy game is meant historically to, I guess, induce stress. But in this particular case, the quarterback situation, they're just generally their execution isn't great. Their quarterback, you know, didn't even complete or attempt a pass last week. You know, so just like, just understand that we're not really dealing with a highly complex creature,
right?
Navy here, you know, it's gonna be kind of a just maul them around, like, you know, just bat them around until you finally just go for the kill. Let's make it quick.
I hope so, indeed. Well, that's the only really other point to make is that Notre Dame, we said, hey, don't get too upset about the rankings. Things are going to happen and shake out. Notre Dame is now at number 8, rounding up the top 10 in the AP is number 10 Wake Forest, with Michigan right in the middle of that sandwich.
Welcome to the club, Wake Forest. Congratulations. You were the final FBS team to have never been ranked in the top 10, and now you're part of the group. Good job, guys. You did it. You did it.
Absolutely awesome. But yeah, I mean, the team's ahead of them right now. Georgia, Cincy still at 2. Bama, OU. Michigan State jumps up there. Ohio State, and then Oregon. So very much, it was one of those things where it's like, oh, do we need Cincy to win? You know, what do we need? It's like, look, I just want to see Cincy make the playoff, because, look, if we had to drop one to them, at least make it worth it. But the destiny, Notre Dame controls their own destiny. That if they need help, something went wrong. That's really what you're looking at right now. This is still very much a win-outable schedule. Look, we know Navy is always its own spectacular round of bullshit that we have to deal with every year. Virginia on the road is not going to be an easy game. Shit, if you caught any of that cocaine game that was Virginia BYU late last night, God.
Yeah, it was on drugs until Virginia OD'd and just it was over.
Yeah, and then they died, literally, out there on the field.
So did the quarterback's ribs. It was a mess. It was a bad
I forgot about that. Yeah, well, we'll talk about all that more over on the Patreon pod. Interested in that, that is at patreon.com. What's something to
look out for a future opponent?
Yeah, patreon.com/ndtechs. And y'all, I mean, look, this is what we want. Yeah, we have the hiccup, but just keep on winning. This hiccup year in a quarterback, you know, little kerfuffle and trying to figure out what's going on in a game where a fucking heater exploded on the sidelines.
That was another one that I caught a picture of. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, we couldn't make the quarterback white smoke jokes, unfortunately, since you know, we kind of had things in hand. But yeah, look, there's all kinds of craziness going on. The offensive line is patchwork, and still,
I think they have found their combination, dude. I don't need to call patchwork anymore. At this point, I think they are going to stick with this group until they are forced to do otherwise. And it may be the piece that Notre Dame was missing to make them a complete enough team to where even if the defense struggles, you can still see them fighting hard enough to win every game regardless.
Absolutely. And look, if the offense is able to put up this kind of point total, even against a bad defense or otherwise, this is a firepower we haven't yet seen from the Irish and is very, very welcome. So, I don't know, Shane, we miss out anything else? Oh, there was a punt return. It was like one of the few plays I missed was Kyron Williams, like, having a nice, huge punt return. But beyond that, I mean, not much else happened, really. Yeah, although I would like Kyron to remember to fair catch a punt when it is a line drive and going to scoot past him. Other than that, I got no other complaints.
No, man, I think we've pretty much covered everything. I feel good about the trajectory of this offense. I feel like Navy is going to serve as a nice little kind of catharsis game. And then Virginia's coming up. Armstrong may or may not be in there. He was definitely saying things about his ribs. And I'm just worried about like the remaining of the schedule. And Virginia is really the only one that poses like, ooh, let's see what happens. That offense is prolific as fuck. But, you know, they also have no defense. So it may just be like a North Carolina clone.
We'll see. Right. And that may very well be the thing. Look, that almost feels like the ACC style right now. As far as teams that are good or decent in that conference, it is all offense, no defense. It is very Big 12 bullshit right now.
That conference
is going to. All right. Well, again, if you want to hear us talk more about the ACC and otherwise, make sure you hit us up on patreon.com/ndtechs. Just $1. We got a new month starting, y'all. So $1 right up here at the beginning of the month will unlock a whole bunch of bonus posts, bonus podcasts. So make sure to get on that. But until then, y'all, we will be back with picks on Wednesday. So make sure you subscribe to this podcast over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you happen to get your podcast feeds at. Come join us in Discord over at herloyalsons.com/Discord and chat us up. And also make sure twitch.tv/herloyalsons. Sim night will come Thursday night at 9 p.m. Central. And of course, you can always find us at herloyalsons.com. With that said, y'all have a good one. Go Irish, beat Navy. Have a good one.